Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, May 22nd, 2018, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And as usual, this is a news analysis. An anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism, and imperialism. An anatomy of the American capitalist system. And tonight, we are going to be discussing several topics. One of them will include a case study of the Poor People's Campaign. And our question is, how has money affected movements? So without further ado, we're going to go to our usual suspects. We're going to open with Brother Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer in the house.
Yes, I am in the house, my brothers and sisters. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And I repeat that every week because people tend to forget if they have ever known that imperialism is the same at home as it is abroad. What do I mean when I say imperialism? That is the system of taking other people's natural resources and using it for yourself. Now, who is the yourself that I speak about? Well, we've all learned about the 1%. And when they con people, young people, to go to the service to fight for their country, they are really fighting for the 1%. The 1% to get more. What do we mean when we say white man's sickness? We mean the sickness is too much, is not enough. It means that there are a group of nations that begin the imperialist struggle, that is invading countries of color around the world and bringing the resources home for the 1%. It was stated in the forming of the League of Nations. It was stated again after World War II. The culprits, the British, that we have just been enthralled and involved in a ceremony, a recent wedding with people loving it. And I wonder why these same people weren't happy when Hitler married Eva Braun, because the British and Winston Churchill were responsible for killing more people than Hitler ever dreamed of killing. But back to our subject, the freeing of political prisoners, and who are political prisoners, and what did they do? They attempted to stop the rape of communities, the rape of the poor. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the wealthy take all of the resources that were destined to be used for the poor in America, and I'm talking about taxes, and use that wealth for themselves. They take the wealth of the world to use for themselves. And for those people, those political people who understood what was going on and they raised a fist against this evil of imperialism at home, they were killed and jailed, and they are political prisoners because they fought the government for political reasons. And when I say imperialism is the same at home as it is abroad, we all know what imperialism is abroad. We all know about the economic hitmen. We all know about the putting in of corrupt leaders in countries so that they can get their resources. And those who said no, those leaders, like Allende in Chile, who believed in democracy, well, they just killed him and put Pinochet in power. And this is what happens abroad, that is, overseas in foreign countries, and it happens at home. And we are a program that advocates for our political prisoners at home. How are they able to do this? Well, we all laugh when we say to people, don't believe your lying eyes. We do not laugh when Malcolm X said, the government has the power to make people hate their friends and love their enemies. We all watch the World Trade Center fall. We all watched the buildings that weren't touched by the planes burn. And we never said, how could that happen? And the government said, don't believe your lying eyes. While we are trying to open eyes on this program, and once again, we have to say, what has happened to all of the movements that were grew in America? What happened to Occupy Wall Street? Money got involved. What happened to the programs that we have in America? Black Lives Matter. Money got involved. And we can go right down the list of all of the movements that we have seen come up in America. If people didn't sell out, they were killed. The Black Panther movement with their 10 points. What happened? They were killed or jailed. The Black Liberation Army, the movement for freedom of people of color, if they didn't sell out. We see Al Sharpton, certainly not a member of the Black Liberation Army, but a pretender of the person who would have liberation for people of color. They are there. He was paid off, and he has survived. Let us continue with the program of what happens and how money has affected a movement. And tonight, we will talk about the Poor People's Campaign. But without further ado, remember, capitalism is the same at home as it is abroad. Sister Betty.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brother Ralph. We look forward to hearing from you later on in our program. And our usual suspects are in other venues tonight. Sister Ann has a medical issue, and Brother Larry is involved in a speaking engagement. However, Brother Tom is here, and he's going to give us some insights into our current events for this evening. So, Brother Tom, are you in the house?
Yes, I am. Hello?
Go ahead. Yes, we're here. We're waiting for your words of wisdom. Tom Syracuse of the Green.
The day of that of the royal wedding, I was not planning on watching this extravaganza, many of the channels kept repeating it, and finally I was surfing the channels, and I got one where they would be at the very beginning of this spectacle. And the more I watched it, the more I became I couldn't stop watching it. It was certainly a very impressive, beautiful event. And yet, watching it and knowing a lot about history, several questions kept popping into my mind. And here we have a situation in which one of Queen Elizabeth's grandsons meets a political activist, a commoner, a divorcee, and he falls in love with her, and they're going to get married. So this is a big challenge now for the British government and for the royal family. How are they going to deal with this? Now, if you remember in the 1930s, the King of England had to abdicate because he wanted to marry an American divorcee, and that was out of the question in those days. That was in the late 1930s. And now we have a situation which is even more complicated. How are they going to deal with this? Well, they could have downplayed the whole thing, have a quiet wedding, a very limited wedding, and left it like that. But they decided to use this wedding as an opportunity to convince the world that the United Kingdom and the royal family in particular and the British government embraced multiracial society, embraced a modern approach to the human condition, and they succeeded in putting on the most successful PR stunt in recent history. They did a wonderful job. I think that most people who don't know much about history, who don't know about the history of the royal family or of the United Kingdom, who don't know how this British Empire, how it became an empire, as Brother Ralph pointed out, the British Empire made Nazi Germany look like pikers when it came to the conquering and killing of hundreds and hundreds of millions of native peoples in Africa and Asia, and established an empire on which the sun never set, and tried to convince the world that they were bringing civilization. They called it, I think, the white man's burden to all of these so-called backward countries. And so that's the history behind the royal family, a symbol of feudalism, of capitalism, of imperialism. And they were able, through this wedding, try to give the world the impression that now everything had changed. I don't know if any of you listening to this to this blog actually saw this royal wedding like I did. I know that the old Queen Elizabeth and her husband, they were kind of I think they were rather flabbergasted. They didn't know exactly how to deal with this. But the British government certainly knew, and the people that were advising how this wedding was to be organized, they certainly knew, and they made sure that the black presence in this wedding was amply represented. A sermon by the first black presiding bishop of the American Episcopal Church, a very closely connected, by the way, with the Church of England. I'm very acquainted with that church because I was brought up in the Episcopal Church. Bishop Curry, the first black, I think he was even the first black bishop, and now he's the presiding bishop of the American Episcopal Church. They had a black choir. They had a young black man who played the cello. He won a prize as one of the leading musicians of in the United Kingdom. They had all of this. And here you had, I believe this wedding cost $45 million, most of it funded by public tax money. Of course, people could say, oh, yes, but with all of these tourists that came over for the wedding, they certainly made up for it. Well, are there other ways of spending $45 million? While this extravaganza was going on in the in this town, what was the name of that town again? Was it Windsor? And that beautiful St. George's Chapel. If you were to walk a little further into the town itself, into every major town in England, you would see people on the streets, homeless people like you see here in the United States, begging. You would see many people of color. Many of them, by the way, were welcome to come into England after World War II in the late 1940s, because there was a shortage of labor, and they were looking for cheap labor to help revitalize the British economy. Well, as we know, the capitalist economies, including the one in Britain and the United States, these economies have been now, they no longer have the power, the imperial presence that they once had, and they have serious competitors. And much of their economy has been outsourced to these competitors in China, Bangladesh, Taiwan, Brazil, Mexico, you name it. And so our economies are floundering. Of course, you wouldn't know it necessarily through the stock market, according to the statistics of unemployment, which are completely false, because they say that we have the lowest unemployment rate here in the United States for many years, but certainly we don't have the kind of employment we had 30 or 40 years ago, where over 35% of the population had union jobs and were making a comparatively a good salary. Today, only about 10% of the population is unionized. And so where are all these other jobs? Well, they're low-paying jobs in service industries like McDonald's, and or part-time workers. Anyway, here you have this huge contradiction of the wealthy elite in England showing themselves off in these limousines, in these $1,000 dresses and hats that they were wearing, the receptions after the wedding were opportunities for them to flaunt their wealth. Now, what about Megan? Now she's a duchess. She was a political activist, and she comes from a relatively moderate income family, nothing much of wealth there. Now she's a duchess. Now what is she going to do? How is she going to handle this? That's a big question. But we'll just have to wait and see. Anyway, this is a huge contradiction that went on the other day in this royal wedding.
Thank you for that, Tom. And along that line of thought, every time I see castles in England as a backdrop for novellas, English style, I wonder how many lives were extinguished to achieve this wealth. I think of the role of slavery, cotton, and guns in the development of the Industrial Revolution. They have not told us about this in school, but that's for a later program. Sister Betty, would you?
Well, we see that Brother Larry Pinckney is in the house, our Black Panther, our former political prisoner, our former jailhouse lawyer who liberated himself. But before we go on to that, I have another comment as I thank Tom for giving us that update on the wedding. Like Brother Ralph, I keep remembering a statistic. As the Europeans moved across the earth, 90% of most populations disappeared. And the British were no exception to that rule. Let's not forget, the British settled this country, and 90% of the original people disappeared. So much for royal weddings and royalty. Madame Lafarge, where are you now that we really need you? So, having said that, Brother Larry is in the house, and we got Sister Gwen waiting in the wings to give us her thoughts on the Poor People's Campaign. Brother Larry, your mic is open.
Thank you very much, my sister, much the sister, Professor Betty Davis, and Brother Ralph Pointer of what's happening. Look, let me just say this, and I know some of y'all might be really upset and offended by what I say, but you know what? I don't give a rat's petunia about the royal wedding. Royal wedding? Give me a break. We got a royal screwing going on of all of us. All of us. And, you know, I don't care if they come up with some Negroian or some whatever. Oh, that's supposed to mean something? Come on. Aren't we old enough, intelligent enough to know better than that? I'm here to talk about political prisoners. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Political prisoners. And the bottom line is that our political prisoners are languishing in these gulags, these death camps, all right? I don't give a rat's petunia, and I'm trying to be nice about a royal wedding because we have had a royal schooling for the past 500 years. Enough, enough already. I think most people, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow, understand that that crap is irrelevant. Irrelevant. It has nothing to do with everyday ordinary people struggling. It certainly has nothing to do with the struggle of freeing our political prisoners. All right? So I just have to say that. And I want to apologize for coming in late. I'm dealing with some of my own issues, medical issues, but it's all good. It is what it is. You get older, you deal with stuff. That's the way it is. But the bottom line is that, you know, we need to understand that the struggle, the basic principles of our struggle does not change. I don't give a damn what they do in Britain. I don't give a damn what they do in Iceland. I don't give a damn what they do over here. The bottom line is we should be, you know, determined to free our political prisoners, all right? There's always going to be some kind of distraction. Oh, this and all that. Forget this and that. Let's stay focused on our everyday ordinary people, everyday ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people in this country, and frankly throughout the world. And you know what? Everyday ordinary people, even in the UK, really don't give a rat's petunia about the royal wedding because they know it's just another royal screwing. So let's deal with the reality of our ongoing struggle right here and right now for all of our people, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow. I want to thank, I'm sort of upset. I just dealt, well, upset. I'm always upset. Are you kidding? Sort of upset. Anybody who pays attention had better damn well be upset. But I'm annoyed that we sometimes seem to get diverted by what the so-called mainstream, what I call vomit stream media pays attention to. I don't give a rat's petunia. I don't give a damn about what the mainstream media, because they're vomit stream. I want to pay attention to what all of us should be about, and that's about freeing our political prisoners. Black, white, brown,
thank
red, and yellow. And
thank you
so much. I'm going to end it right here and right now and say thank you very much for the time, and I'm off. All right? Thank you so much. All power to the people.
Thank you for that, Larry Pinkney. And we're going to talk with someone who has been defending us from the royal screwing by Obama, Hillary, Trump, and the political system. Gwen Goodwin, who has been fighting this system ever since I've known her, on the basics of education, housing, etc. Gwen is now involved in the Poor People's Campaign. Gwen, are you in the house?
I am in the house. Good evening, everybody. The Poor People's Campaign is something that I've been hearing about. And I don't know for sure the players behind the scenes, but I know that Reverend Barber was very involved with somebody who's pretty high up in my church. And the person that's pretty high up in my church is himself worth a ton of money. And I've been pondering this all week and wondering, you know, how can you get this right in your mind? I mean, could it just be that they have good intentions, or is it really just self-seeking? And it worries me because, as I've told you, that my church sold a piece of their property, got $25 million for it, and then invested it in UBS. And what does UBS do? Well, UBS is one of the dirtiest banks in the world, and they are responsible for much of the collapse of Puerto Rico, and they have been money laundering for years, and they are involved in the prison industrial complex, and this is what brought hell and high water for me with my church. I had to have it out with the church, because if you are going to go up and tell me that you are so-called progressive, that you care about prisoners, that you care about black lives, that you want to be an activist church, then I don't see how you could turn over that kind of money to UBS to have your money laundered like the rest of the Wall Street bankers. And then when I looked behind the curtain and looked at the former occupations of the people that worked in my church, almost all of them have a Wall Street background. And almost all of them really, I hate to say, are very self-seeking. I would say they were more self-seeking than anything. But, you know, some of these people are in their early 40s and their 30s, and that happens to a lot of people. But I found out today another very progressive church that that I really do like has also been forced to close its doors. Janhus at 74th Street, East 74th Street, which feeds a ton of homeless people, which does a lot of great things in the community, is now being pushed out because they are in such debt. And I wondered, you know, I've been thinking all day of trying to how to come up with ways of saving the church. And one of the ways of saving the actual building is something that they're probably not going to like. It's landmarking it. And you can landmark a building against the wishes of the owner. And the reason why I think this is important is because all of these churches are getting into the habit of selling their facilities for millions of dollars. For example, across the street from us, we are going to lose the Children's Aid Society. It's going to be torn down. Because the church across the street from me, which is a brownstone church, a Pentecostal church, has been wooed for years by a developer who wants to take yet another, you know, not just a couple of buildings, but half the block. So they're going down, and they're set to become millionaires too. It's getting hard to tell the difference between the millionaires and the churches. And these churches now are becoming organized in the Poor People's Campaign. And I get very worried when I see poor people being manipulated. When I see anybody, I mean, anyone that's being manipulated, and of course we always are by our own government, that's for sure. But I do worry about what's behind the people in the Poor People's Campaign. I also want to go on and say that tonight I was talking to a woman who I know who's Spanish, and there's something else going on in this country that is really alarming to me, and that is that when somebody does something that you find distasteful, they are completely destroyed. And although I don't agree with – there was an incident, I guess, 2 weeks ago where a lawyer was speaking to somebody Spanish. He spoke very rudely to the Spanish person. He asked him why couldn't he speak English. And the next day they had a funny prank. They had the mariachi band go over and, you know, play in front of his building, which, of course, he didn't appreciate. But they went further than that. They have now disbarred this lawyer, and they have totally ruined him. And – this to me is not justice. This one of the most important things that we have to have, whether we like what people are saying, is freedom of speech. I don't like what this man said, but what I keep hearing liberals and people that are progressive saying is, look, we're not going to take him to court. We're not going to do any due process here. If we think they did something bad, we're just going to destroy them. And that means destroy their foundation of business and their name and whatever else they can, and we're going to stand on our piety. And usually it's false piety, because really, if we look at people's lives and we look at the overall picture, everybody has dirt in their life, everybody. And this false piety of destroying somebody because you had discovered something you thought was distasteful. Well, in this case, it's not just distasteful. In this case, it's about freedom of speech. And that means that just being based on something we don't like that somebody said, we're going to destroy them. I think that we are really at a critical mass. And I also had heard one more thing today that was really troubling, and that was I heard a term being used for constitutionally free states. In other words, states that didn't have to follow the Constitution, kind of like what happened in Michigan, because really Michigan is privately owned and operated. They don't have an elected government. They have an appointed government, and it was appointed by somebody who was appointed to, you know, the governorship. Actually, I guess he was elected. But these are the things that I find very, very troubling. As a matter of fact, I might find it a relief to go ahead and watch the royal wedding as a royal distraction from all of the collapses I see happening in America. And I think that we are not at the same old place that we used to be. We are not. We are in a different time, and we need to really pay attention to these things that people say are subtle, but they're not. As a matter of fact, just one more thing is that I heard this week when it turned out that Michael Cohen, the lawyer for Trump, was letting the FBI know the different companies, the different corporations that were paying him to have an audience with President Trump. Then I heard that, you know, the companies like AT&T were apologizing for that, saying they did the wrong thing. They didn't just do the wrong thing, they broke the law. And what I want to know is, why aren't these corporations being brought into to court, to our court systems? it's clear you're not allowed to pay to have to have a seat with the president. And the fact that Cohen was making so much money off of doing this should be very, very disturbing to us. I mean, I find the Trump presidency very disturbing on so many levels. And although, you know, he may have prevented us from going to war with Russia, that doesn't mean he's going to stop us from going to war with the rest of the Middle East, which looks like what we're pushing for. So these are some of the things that are on my mind tonight. And I just want to say that I do not agree with the way the money was spent for the royal wedding. I don't like all the oppression that has that created the kingdom. But I want to say that there was some positive stuff that came out of it. You know, you can look at these things two ways. You can look at the glass half full and just pounce all over it. Or you can look at it half empty, and you got to say that this guy, you know, Harry, really had some kahunas to go in and say, this is the woman I love. She has nothing to do with royalty. She's not even English. She's American. And I think that this couple has a different vision. Now, are they being exploited because of their vision? Yes, they are being exploited. But I think Meghan's going to be a very interesting person in England. She comes from a completely different background. She knows how regular people in America live. So before we, you know, kick them all to the curb, I mean, there is this protocol they have. She had to follow it, but she might do some good things. These are two young people that, you know, push through a lot of standards that I'm sure the royals weren't happy with. But they went ahead and did it anyway, and I would like to, you know, say that I think that there might be some good that comes out of it. I don't endorse royal weddings, but I thought it was I did think it was lovely. I thought it was really a beautiful thing to watch. I also didn't take it seriously because it's not serious. It's just a bunch of junk. But I think given the rest of the news this week, I needed a little distraction on Saturday. You know, it was a day, by the way, it was a day before my husband's anniversary of his death. So I guess I did need to see that just to think about the heavy things and the heaviness of our society right now. So every once in a while, I think that we on the left would do good to look at the glass half full. You never know how long your life is going to be. So there is times to give thanks, and there's lots of work for us to do, but we can't do it if we feel crushed by the oppression of all the hopelessness around us. It's up to us on the left to bring hope to other people, to have them feel empowered to keep going on with these struggles and battles. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen Goodwin, who has been struggling for fairness and justice in this political system. But I'm reminded of Ralph Shulman, who said, I'm paraphrasing, I care not what the wealthy do to get their jollies off. How does it affect us down here on the ground is the real issue. And we must understand that there is corruption, but real corruption is when the people see the corruption and let it go. And when you were talking about Michigan, you were referring, I assume, to fiscal emergency managers appointed by the governor of Michigan, and they do not operate under law as we understand that. When they put Reverend Pinckney 3.5 years in jail because of a date changed on a petition, and no one knows who changed it, but we do know Reverend Pinckney went to jail for 3.5 years out of his life on a petition. And we know Michigan is not a part of the United States because in New York, right, we forget how many votes were put aside by the Democratic Party on behalf of Democrats who dared vote for Bernie Sanders. And so how does Reverend Pinckney go to jail for 3.5 years on a date on a petition? They're not a part of even this phony Democratic system that we have. And we know it's phony when you talk about democratic system because you have to talk about Flint. They still don't have water. And correct, suddenly disappeared from the news. Where is this country? Is it in South America? Where is the government of Michigan? It's certainly not a part of what we see here. Thank you. And I think, Joel, are you ready for words of wisdom for us this evening?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Joel Myers.
Yes.
And if you haven't had an introduction, I say Joel Myers has been telling the truth about this system for many, many a moon. It was early and mid-60s when I first met Joel out there speaking truth against power. Joel, the mic is open.
Yes. Well, listening to all of these different analyses going on, and I think, that when we I liked what Glenn said about, that maybe it'll be some jolt of consciousness raising, at least, or something like that, that comes out of this new marriage, although I'm not really that optimistic about that happening. But in the recent English history, there was another wedding. That was the wedding of Charles to Diana. And we all knew that, we all know now that Diana cultivated a great deal of popularity, and she began to take certain stands that, at least implicitly, became anti-imperialist. For example, she walked across a minefield in Angola, and I know that she visited Harlem Hospital, and she was it was during the height of the AIDS crisis, and she was told that when she was near the AIDS patients, she should wear a mask and gloves. She said, well, she refused because she said, look, they were protecting her against the contagion of AIDS. She said, well, you can't catch AIDS that way. And these articles are only designed to separate me from the AIDS patients. And I want to be close with them, at least during this visit. And we all know what happened to Diana. There was supposedly a limousine that was driven by an expert security driver. They said he was an alcoholic, but his waitress in the restaurant that he ate in almost every day said, well, she never saw him drunk. He did have a glass of wine occasionally with his dinner. You know that if somebody is really an alcoholic, they can't just have one glass of wine and like people that haven't become addicted to alcohol, it makes them they have to be teetotalers. So that's pretty much a proof that they invented that whole story about him being an alcoholic in order to explain the fatal accident where he crashed into a pillar in a tunnel. And we know, for example, that there was a cab driver by the name of William Whaley who had witnessed the JFK assassination and said that a lot of the circumstances were different from what was described in the media, and that he, a few weeks later, had a head-on collision on a highway, and his car was going 80 miles an hour. This is an experienced cab driver. It's very improbable, and it's not that difficult to tamper with a car and to make it pick up that kind of speed and get out of control. And of course, one of the big crises that took place in Diana's life as she drifted away from her horrible marriage to Prince Charles is that she began associating with Dodi Fayed, who was a Muslim, right? He was a descendant of from the Middle East, and quite socially prominent also. But her, if you stop to think of it, one of the things that brought about the Iraq War was the collaboration between the British and American ruling classes in order to put troops into that area. With each one, they usually say that Blair is was Bush's poodle, but I think it, a lot of that might have been in reverse. Blair came into office right at the time of what I consider certainly the assassination of Diana. And if Diana were associated with not just any old Muslim, but part of a proud family, and with her immense popularity, it might have been impossible to generate this collaboration of these the Americans and the British in the invasion of Iraq, and also to keep cultivating the hatred of Muslims, the Islamophobia that drives a lot of today's foreign policy and distorts public opinion. So, and I know that one of her remarks, when she was asked about the royal family itself, she said they have such an artificial image, but in reality they are reptiles, she called them, reptiles. And that's how that royal family is. And okay, maybe Meghan could be another Diana who takes certain oppositional steps. It could be everything else that today's ruling class is doing is falling apart. So it's a system that's rotten at the core, and is increasingly unable to maintain a fitness. And that's one of the conditions for revolution. That class is going down because of the building strength of the people that have been oppressed for so long by this system, and the rot at, here and there, maybe with a few exceptions. Like I say, I'm not really that optimistic. And I think I just did want to comment also that just as this wedding was taking place, and all this focus on this reptile family that has been one of the major parasites of the entire world, what was going on in the Middle East was the, we talk about the apartheid of the Israeli Zionist entity, and what was going on there was that apartheid regime's Cape Town, I believe, because they have been firing routinely live fire into unarmed people that are symbolically marching on the fence that's dividing Palestine between the imperialist-controlled white settler area and the indigenous people that have been driven into life in a concentration camp. And here you have the government of Israel and all of their prominent officials openly declaring to the world, we will shoot people who symbolically march near that fence. We will shoot live fire into them.
Right.
And this it was so infuriating, especially at the time of Passover, when which is the holiday that sort of is used and manipulated to generate the justification for the white settler state in occupied Palestine, and this and people celebrating this, which here's a religion that they say thou shalt not kill. They say that we of the Hebrew heritage are supposed to be the chosen to be, even at great suffering, to be the light of the world, to practice the morality embodied in the Ten Commandments. And everybody is blandly celebrating this while all of the this routine firing into unarmed crowds of people who are symbolically trying to march onto their onto the land that was stolen from them only a few generations ago, with absolutely no pretense to even a humane approach of any type. It's just they want to march on, back on their land. We kill them. We just fire bullets into them. It's a totally infuriating spectacle that took place around the world, and I believe that that's one of the things that's going to act like the Cape Town incident, which was a massacre also of dozens and dozens of oppressed black people who had been made virtual slaves in their own land, in Africa, by these white settlers, both of the Dutch and British variety. So that was one of the things that began to trigger world public opinion that eventually brought down the openly apartheid system, although still leaving in place much of the white ruling class in that area in the current more disguised white supremacist regime there. And this, I believe, will have that impact of waking people up as to to get rid of this new apartheid situation in the Middle East, and with that awaken a revolution where people can take control of those resources that are now used by imperialism, the oil that's sent there, but also I want to say one thing also, that many of these holidays are manipulated in such a way so as to create a paranoid ingredient in the Jewish Hebrew identity. And it's carried up to the point where it's it becomes an ongoing collective and mental illness with feedback. And one of the most dangerous types of mentally ill people is the true paranoid, because the paranoid feels that they have to get you before you get them. So it produces a great deal of aggression exceeding, and that's a lot of the mentality that goes behind justifying all of these crimes and oppressions of the of that right now most actively aggressive component of world imperialism.
Thank you so much.
And we must remember that the South African apartheid government was supported by the United States and the European Union, etc., the same as the apartheid government in Israel is supported by the United States. And next week we will talk about Ward Churchill's stunning analysis of the destruction of the indigenous people and the Palestinians.
I see we have a guest on. Vivia, did you want to give us a shout-out before we shut down?
Yes. I had the Community Board 9 meeting tonight. I'm sorry I'm a little late for it, but I try to get in on the bottom end. So I just want to say thank you for the program, and hopefully next week I'll be able to try to get on a little earlier. They just dragged out the meeting. So thank you
for that. For electing.